Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed to near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization, Toward the Light, and the services and support and resources that we offer, including this radio program, please visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. A little tiny announcement that I would like to make before we start this wonderful show is that I have developed an online near-death support and interest group community called Light on the Water. And I would like to invite anyone who's interested to become a member. There is no charge. Go to lightonthewater.ning.com. Ning as in night, N-I-N-G, so lightonthewater.ning.com. It's really growing by leaps and bounds already, and it's a wonderful community, so I'd love to encourage people to check it out. This week I'm very pleased to have back a good friend and someone who's definitely no stranger to either Toward the Light or the NDE community. In fact, this is the individual who produced the brilliant and beautiful, awe-inspiring film Life After Life, based on Dr. Raymond Moody's book by the same title. Welcome to Toward the Light, Peter Schocke. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Juliet. So nice to be with you again.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you on Toward the Light, and I know there's been all kinds of really interesting work and developments with your film and your new website. But first, let's rehash a little bit of the history behind your developing and producing the film Life After Life.
Yes. It's hard to know exactly where to start, but if I could, I'll just launch in and explain
sure.
how my interests developed in the subject of near-death experiences.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, I had had an experience of my own, a spiritually transformative experience that really set the tone for my life. And I did not know how to get my arms around it, to understand what had really happened. I really came from a very average household, normal household, I suppose, in my day. And I was born in 1955, so I was in the generation of the, you know, the hippie love generation, but I was one of the young upcomers arriving into junior high and high school around the late 60s, early 70s. And so I wasn't, you know, I really wasn't very knowledgeable about much of anything at the 1968 when my experience happened. I had not been raised in a traditional home, or I should say a traditionally religious home. My parents were sort of pre-hippies. They called themselves sort of bohemian. Lived in Greenwich Village, New York. Mom had been an immigrant from Switzerland. Dad was a lawyer. But they met under just real colorful circumstance in New York. And I was born in Greenwich Village. They moved from there, just not wanting to raise a child in the city, and moved to Santa Fe and ultimately California, San Francisco, L.A. And by the time I was seven, we moved to Washington, D.C., where I was really raised. Now, they were, as I say, sort of bohemians, very creative, artistic, very nice folks, both of them. Just salt of the earth, nice, people. And but neither one of them had any particular spiritual background. No, neither religious nor spiritual. But they were seekers. They were open-minded. And come 1968, this was the, I can peg it in people's memory as the summer of Jesus Christ Superstar, the rock opera. You remember that?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So it was, Jesus had become sort of a folk hero, and, you know, I liked his music, you know, and I didn't really have any particular understanding of who he was on in a spiritual sense. But in the context of a retreat, I went to a beach retreat with some friends, and picking up on the, you know, the rock opera context, the teachers there were talking about Jesus' teachings of love, and that was his primary motive, and that he said that was the greatest of all commandments. I was told that he had had a tremendously hard time with the religious orthodoxy, which was fine with me in that day. You know, that was sort of a time to be a rebel anyway, so here was another, you know, kind of a Che Guevara type. And I was more intrigued by his personality and his teachings. And then finally, after a few days of this retreat, someone had suggested or informed me that Christ was actually an eternal spirit who could be contacted and spoken with, and that that was his greatest purpose and greatest invitation. It wasn't at all to start a religion or to become religious, but to have a spirit, you know, one-on-one relationship that way. And I did not, I was kind of blown away by the idea. But I really just about dismissed it, but I decided, okay, might as well be fair. And together with a few friends in the evening, I just myself said, you know, what ultimately was a prayer, but it sounded more like a seance, I suppose. I said, if you are really out there, and if it's true that you're still able to be contacted, would you please just let me know, or give me a sign, or let me know one way or the other so that I can believe it or not. And it was just immediate. It was just, it was instantaneous. I had an experience that I still find very hard to describe, but I'll try, because it was a warmth, a light, a brilliant, radiant love that was coming from, I can even place it right at the center of my chest, around my solar plexus. And it felt like 1,000 birds taking off. It was more than, you know, somebody asked me, oh, were you just having butterflies with this emotion? And it was so much more than that. It was like a 1,000 or 1,000,000 watt light bulb went off at once, and was radiating and expanding through me. And I could feel it growing. And I could tell it was a personal being that was taking foothold in my body, in my heart. And when I opened my eyes, I realized that all of my friends were sobbing just like I was. And they were experiencing the same thing, the four of us. So it was an amazing, rather spontaneous experience. Farthest thing from an altar call that you might hear in a church, you know, come up and receive Jesus. It was a spiritual phenomenon that I was at a loss to try to describe to anyone. I immediately tried to tell other people about it. And I could just tell right away that I was being pegged as a religious convert or fanatic, zealot of some kind. And in fact, I had absolutely no indoctrination. I mean, I had no training. I didn't have the first knowledge of what it meant that this thing had happened. And to abridge the story and perhaps give us a better setup to why life after life became a fascination to me, I found myself in a position where I was not able to describe this in words to anyone, and in any way that was adequate to the experience. However, within just a very short time, it was probably months, maybe even less, I developed a fascination for movie making. And I just knew from that very moment, I was only a 14-year-old boy at the time, I knew that somehow this interest in film was going to help me to be able to describe what this thing was that happened to me.
Is that what motivated your interest in film, do you think, or at least in part?
Well, it wasn't sparked by trying to depict it, not right away anyway, because the film interest became planted as a school project. It was a insightful history teacher who said, well, you could do a project of any kind. You can make a sugar cube castle or a book report, or you could draw a picture or make a movie. And as soon as she said, make a movie, it was the light bulb went off.
Yes.
So all of the movies I made through high school were more or less school projects, except for one, which was, in fact, my third film, done in, I think I was 15 and a half by then. And that film was on a near-death experience. Now, mind you, this is about 1969 or 1970. We wouldn't hear anything about near-death experiences for another 6 or 7 years.
I was just going to say, wow, and that you actually had heard some kind of reference to that phenomena at that time, because I had already by that time had a number of them myself that didn't know anything about it or how to talk about it or... Well, how do you say?
It wasn't part of our language yet.
Correct, yes.
Moody's book, Life After Life, hadn't come out, wouldn't for a few more years. But
so what did you stumble upon? And this is very interesting. I'd love to learn about this.
You mean, are you referring to that first film?
Yeah, and the interest in the near-death experience and how you even stumbled upon the phenomena in the first place.
Well, I would say that we'd have to sort of connect the dots to see the picture that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
This high school movie was a film about a young. Oh, it was it was pretty immature plot, and I would never show it to anybody seriously now. But it was a young burglar who dies in a burglary attempt. He's shot by the homeowner, who was my dad, and. As he's laying dying, he sees his life flash before his eyes.
Uh-huh.
He has the life review. Well, I mean, maybe, I suppose you could give it that there was this cliche that we've always had, which is you see your life flash before your eyes. But it was a pretty small nugget for me to have woven a whole plot around. And at any rate, that was my first film at about 15. Then a few years later, I was in film school at the University of Maryland, and in my senior year, we needed to make a senior project. Well, my roommate in college had just given me the book Life After Life, brand new release now. That was a big bestseller. And I read it, and as a sort of a joint project, which, by the way, this is the way I made it through school. Is I would do school, I would do films for school projects. I did a film for psychology class, and for my senior film project on this book, Life After Life. And now we're talking about 1978. I can't tell you. I was about 19 or 20 at this point. And I made the film doing special effects that were really beyond my training. I don't know how I invented those effects, but they were pretty convincing for the tunnel and the light, you know?
Yes, very much so. You've done an exquisite job, and in fact, I wanted to ask you about that, too.
Well, this film was... Wow. This film in college was not yet Life After Life, but it was the predecessor. And it launched me into a career in doing special effects, which I really just wanted to learn how to depict the light. And I developed a pretty colorful career over the next 12, 13 years up until... That moment, which is shown in the film Life After Life, where I had the good fortune of meeting Raymond Moody, and now we're in the year 1991, and Moody came to town. His book had been a bestseller by this point for already 15 years, and he came to Nashville. And did a radio show, not unlike what you and I are doing right now. And I happened to tune into it, and I tracked him down, went and talked to him at his hotel, and there the collaboration to make the movie it was born that day.
Well, I was thinking that you had already moved to Nashville when you connected with him, because I think... He lived and still does live in Alabama, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay. And, that was just so stunning. And actually, I think you told me that you were the first person he did not turn down after several requests to want to do films and documentaries based on his book.
That's right. That's what Raymond told me. He said that he had been... Well, I first said that I imagine that you've done dozens of documentaries by now. I figure this has been really probably pretty well played out as a documentary. And he said, well, no, in fact, although there have been a number of documentaries, and he's done some interviews, he never felt comfortable about doing a film version of his book with the title Life After Life. Because he didn't feel right about it. He never felt quite comfortable with either the project, the proposal, or with the filmmakers. But for some God only knows reason, we did connect that day, and he said, yes, I think that you would do a great job. We did say a prayer together, which I think is notable. He really wanted to make sure that the film was done in an artful way, a creative way, that would do more than just explain in an academic, intellectual way what was going on in this experience. And I think that was a real important feature for him to have told me that he wanted to portray, because I think it made all the difference in the film.
And did you show him any samples of your work when you were speaking with him?
I did. I showed him some effects that I had done, uh-huh. Because by that point I'd been a special effect animator for 12, 13 years, and I was able to show him a demo reel, and I even showed him some tests that I had recently done, just within a couple of months before his coming to do the radio show. And then, by the way, in those days, people traveled to do radio shows.
Yes, indeed. Some of them still do.
Yeah, some do. But he had been impressed with the samples that I'd shown him. And I had done a few of these tests, particularly on wanting to depict the light and the tunnel, and I think that might have really caught his attention.
Oh, I'm sure, because there's so much of that element in his account, and I should interject here. It's kind of interesting because I think it is because of Raymond's book that the tunnel has become very much an archetype, as it were. Even though PMH Atwater and a number of other people have pointed out that only one third of all NDEers have the experience of the tunnel, and I'm one, even though I've had multiple near-death experiences, I've never experienced the tunnel. This would be an interesting bit of research to find out who experiences the tunnel and why. And actually, in the Journal of Near-Death Studies that's distributed by the International Association for Near-Death Studies, there I had read an article about why certain people have the experience of the tunnel as opposed to those who do not. And I've been trying to find it because I'd like to research into this more. A lot of people are curious about it. And some people felt because when something really suddenly happens to an individual, like, for example, a heart attack or being in a motor car accident or what have you, that one will be more likely to experience the tunnel because it's a sudden break away from the body, as it were, as opposed to something that is more like me dealing with diseases where I was just ebbing away. So that's interesting bit of conversation there, something that really worth researching, because I know that that's you know, it's powerful. And even without a full-blown NDE, a lot of people who have out-of-body experiences will also go into a tunnel. So again, this is really good subject for research, I think. You know, really figuring out what is the tunnel all about. But you did some amazing work capturing not only the effects, but you know, the how it would feel and how it would look as people are traversing through the tunnel, because there's been many different tunnel accounts, as I'm sure you're well aware.
Yes, different descriptions, different ways of explaining it or describing it. It's interesting that you and you're right that many of these elements that are discussed are not universal, that they're certainly not experienced by everyone who has a near-death experience, but that in fact these various elements are sort of the sum total of a composite sketch, if we can call it that.
Yes, yes.
Things that tend to be encountered by more than just one person and more than just a small number, but that has a corroborated history, and you can trace the tunnel through numerous near-death experiences, and yet. I believe Raymond makes it clear in his book that he really is showing the total composite here, and that very few people experience every one of these elements.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, when you're watching the film, must understand that we're really following Raymond's composite sketch. He introduced me to most of the people that we are interviewing in the film, and yet you'll notice if you look really closely that not every person comes back to tell, I should say, is rotated through these various elements. You will not hear every person weighing in with exactly the same experience. You'll see the cast of characters, and we'll go through those 14, 15 different elements that are mentioned, but sometimes you'll hear more from one or two characters and then maybe not hear from them for a while until later in the film. And that's the reason. It's people are not all experiencing identically the same elements each time.
Well, when I was talking to Kevin Matthews, who's actually developed an NDE course for NDEers finding their purpose, you know, once we come back from the other side, from a near-death episode were imbued with this sense of purpose, of mission. So Carolyn has developed a course for helping people to tap into what their calling, what their mission, what their work is, after having had a near-death episode. And you know, we were talking about these different experiences and how really important it is. We were talking on our Light in the Water teleconference support and interest group meeting last night. It's wonderful. It takes place on the teleconference takes place the fourth Saturday of the month. And you know, I think it's very important because life after life really served to help alert people to this phenomena called the near-death experience. And now, you know, I'm very pleased that more and more people are coming forward, and now we can even look forward to courses and to, you know, material that's really going to help us to not feel so isolated. Because, you know, even at the time that your film happened, at the time that the book was published, I still didn't know about it. I still didn't know about the near-death experience. I think it was actually as a result of your film that I found out about Raymond Moody. And I don't even watch television, so I was visiting someone, and the people in that location were, you know, they had this on their telly, and I said, oh, goodness me, this is what I went through. So I can't tell you how invaluable that is. And so, you know, being able to discuss this, and also, what else I was going to say about Carolyn is that we were discussing the fact that so many of the NDEs, you know, most of it, she was pointing out, even though we're both from England, we're both from Lancashire, in fact, that this all came about into the light of day, as it were, mostly in America. And then it just, in more recent years, actually started spreading all over the world. And so I can see where life after life would have mostly, I'm not going to say American, but Western individuals, you know, people sharing their experiences from a Westerner's perspective. And that's very important to point out, because there have also been, in fact, we were talking about this in the meeting, that now there's a lot of material coming out from China, from different places in the Orient, about near-death experiences, and I'm sure it'll be very interesting to get their perspective, because again, they've had a completely different cultural and spiritual slash religious influence than there's us in the West. So that's going to give us an entirely different bent on the NDE. Maybe you'll do Life After Life Volume 2 on, you know, NDEs from the Eastern perspective.
Yes, I would be very interested in doing a collection of international and intercultural NDEs. I've read a number of them and have found that culture does tend to color the terminologies, because they do have, people are trying to grasp for descriptors. As I did when I had my spiritual experience as a young guy, I looked for terms, and I think people who have various religious backgrounds are going to use different terms.
Yes, and I remember even reading about Native American NDEs and some Japanese NDEs, and of course, instead of a tunnel, they would experience bridges and rivers.
That's something we find a lot in other cultures too. Is the idea of the river and the water, crossing of the water.
Yes, yes. So I think, you know, this is tremendous though, because Raymond Moody's work and your work has really made some monumental impact in our world, and this has been a tremendous beginning. And I think the fact that you had this spiritually transformative experience enabled you to not only grok, as it were, I really like to use that word, I think it's a great word, the whole concept of the near-death and spiritually transformative experience, because your own experience really enabled you to understand that on such a deep level. And that was another point I wanted to make as well, is that people do not need to be on the verge of death to have such powerfully transformative experiences. That's the beauty of all of this, is that there are a number of ways to have these experiences that are all going to have just as powerful an impact, except for the fact that when somebody does experience physical death of the body, that is a very powerful experience in itself. Oh my goodness me, I came back from physical death. So that's definitely going to have added impact, but still the transformative experiences that one has, that communion with Source and with your higher self is just as powerful with an out-of-body or spiritually transformative experience as it is with a full-blown near-death experience.
It seems and that in either case, whether it's a near-death experience or a spiritually transformative or revelationary experience in which the light, God, reveals himself to you, which is really the way I would have to describe my experience. In either case, what you've done is quite suddenly gone beyond the veil or the barrier of your ego, of your earthly identity, and seen suddenly that which has always been there,
yes,
which
yes.
we came from, in fact, and that we don't see because all of these other things that are louder, more pervasive, more demanding in the sensory world sort of obliterate. But when you have either an unintended appointment, as when you hit a car or suddenly die, no longer there, or when you do it willfully, as you say, by choice or by design, I think the results are often similar.
Well, last week, for example, it's actually been 10 days now. Yes, it was on 16th October. I was just taking a walk along the water, as I do, speaking of the water again. And because now I'm not so far from your old house, being in southeastern Virginia, near Virginia Beach. So I like to walk along the water, and what's interesting is that as I was approaching the bridge, and then as soon as I stepped onto the Monroe Bridge, all of a sudden this amazing peace came over me. I mean, amazing peace. I was so calm, totally free of fear, and I was noting it as I was having the experience. My goodness me, this is like what I experienced during my near-death state. This total calm, this amazing peace, absolutely no fear or stress or worry. For the moment, I wasn't concerned about the chemtrails and all of the military activity going on around me or the economic crises that this world is in and all of that. It just all melted away. And I was reminded once again, as I was during all of my near-death episodes, that everything is evolving exactly the way it should, that love is all around us at all times, even when we're not aware of it, and that everything is going to be all right, that love does prevail and it will prevail, and so does the light. So I felt like I was having that experience not only for myself but also to share with others as a reminder. We are not alone, and love is everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely everywhere. And it can happen, you know, in the blink of an eye. All of a sudden, you're maybe gardening or taking a walk or playing or listening to music or what have you, and you're transported into this beautiful space that is real. So I'm very grateful about that, because I think also when we put our intent out there, as you did, that the portals opened up for you to have that powerful experience, and simultaneously your friends experienced it with you. And they all had pretty much the same experience, is that right?
They did. They were going through very, very much the same thing. I'm not sure if we were all just going in with the same intent. I'm not claiming that my request was, you know, on behalf of everybody, but it was perhaps the closest I'd felt to anybody ever to have opened my eyes and seen that my friends were also in touch with this incredible power, and
wow.
they were able to describe it to me in terms that I could understand too. It made much more sense to one another at that moment than when we tried to go off and tell our other friends who were off playing football at the time. We got sort of blank stares from those folks, and they didn't quite know what we were so suddenly excited about.
Wow. Well, as a young person, it doesn't seem to matter if one is a youth or a little child. These things are so exciting that you naturally want to share them, because it brought you such overwhelming peace and feeling very empowered and loved. And then to get these people looking at you sideways, as it were, that's very disconcerting. And that's also why this work is so important, to help educate people about all of this, so that that stigma and people being regarded as odd or being a nutter or what have you can ideally be eliminated.
I'll tell you what's really funny to see, and it's something that we can all sort of think about and meditate on as far as learning empathy. You can hear people's spiritual experiences, whether they're coming from a Christian perspective, a new age, a new thought, whatever, what have you, any terminology you can give to it. As soon as you put a pigeonhole, as soon as you put a frame around it, a box like that, it begins to come across as a doctrine rather than an experience.
Yes.
And I think that as long as people really give one another the room and the almost the forgiveness for being limited human beings, we can hear one another's experience without preconceptions and without, you know, feeling some sort of tribal exclusivity about my experience was more, you know, valid than theirs, or that sort of feeling.
I mean, I always make the point that all experiences are valid. Each and every one of them, it doesn't matter how simple or elaborate or how lofty they are, they're all very valid. And I like to really support people who have had these experiences and encourage them to come out, because some people are still feeling lots of reservations and even judging themselves. And I say, blimey, you can't do that. You know, your experience is very special and very precious and meaningful. And there's no competition, no contest going on here. And it's every little bit of it always brings me a lot of inspiration as I'm researching now, connecting with experiences all over the world. I seem to never tire of learning about other people's experiences. In fact, they really inspire me. Again, it doesn't matter how simple or lofty they are. They really do inspire me in a huge, huge way, because I think, all right, here's one more person who is able to come out and share one's experience and feel a lot of ease as a result of doing that. So I think that this is really, really tremendous work. Now, getting back to your film and your work with Raymond, let's rehash a little bit. When did you start working on the film, and when was it released?
The original film was started in 1991, released 1992. Within that year, well, within 6 months of its completion, it was airing on the Learning Channel. And they did that for the next 5 years. They were showing it every, this is interesting, every Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving. They showed it regularly, and they would rotate it three or four times a day for 5 years. And I won't go too far off on a sidetrack, but I did several other films for the Learning Channel that stemmed from Life After Life. I did a couple of films on angel experiences, you know, as a direct result of having heard of so many angelic presences within the near-death experience. It sparked an interest in angels. And then ultimately I did a couple of other films on miracles, miracle stories, often attributed to angelic intervention or divine intervention. And so at a certain point, the Learning Channel would take all five of these one-hour shows, and they would just rotate them through the whole day, Christmas, Easter, and Thanksgiving. They sort of had the corner on the spiritual programming on TLC.
And this is just an America I take. The Learning Channel, is that some sort of special television network?
Oh, it is. The Discovery Network, which now has spawned over a half a dozen different networks, including the Discovery Health and Animal Planet and others. But the second spinoff from Discovery Network was the Learning Channel, TLC. And so in the 90s, throughout the 90s, TLC was airing all of these shows that I speak about. I'd like to suggest something, Juliet. I've just been, as we're talking, I'm looking at my flat screen monitor, and I've just had the lifeafterlife.tv website open, and I've clicked onto the Behind Life After Life, which has a continuous running loop of the tunnel you've probably seen and watched. I'd like to mention the fact that people can watch the film for free, if they'd like to, on the website, which is just now released. The website is now officially launched. And I know you wanted to mention the website. I'd like to ask you, when people are listening to the radio show, do they have access within a couple of mouse clicks to the banner on your website?
Oh, I think so.
Maybe you could guide people to show them how they could go to the website. Now, they may not want to do that while listening to the show, because I imagine it would knock them off the radio show. But they might want to take note of where to find this.
Well, actually, I've put it all over the place. It's even at the bottom of the lightonthewater.ning.com NDE community site. And it's also on towardthelight.org. It's also located on the TTL radio show blog, which is towardthelightorg.blogspot.com. So, and in fact, I've also got your trailer of Life After Life on a few sites. Also, I've included it in the Toward the Light newsletter, so I guess it's no secret that I really believe in this film and the work that you've done, Peter, because it's absolutely stunning. I get all choked up just seeing the trailer, for goodness sakes. It moves me so deeply to see that. It's so, wow, he's done. I really know in no uncertain terms that you were called to do this work. It's just so auspicious how it all came together. And again, because you had your own STE, that really, I think, help catapult you into doing this work from such a profound place of knowing, because you've got your amazing artistic skill on top of the experience, and I just think, wow, there's no one more qualified to do this. And I think you've done amazing work.
You used the word earlier, mission, that people are left with a sense of mission after their experience. And that is exactly the word I would use to describe the feeling that I've had toward this subject. And even 15 years after making the film, you know, in most filmmakers' minds, once a film has reached that maturity, 15 years, they're ready to put it on the shelf and put it to bed. But I feel like it is really only just beginning. In fact, maybe even beginning a new life right now with the website, with lifeafterlife.tv.
Because now, let me ask you, are there, you said the, it seems like you were making a reference to a first release. Did you change the film at all once you had already released it? Were there addendums or what have you?
We have added some bonus material. When it was first released, it was released as a VHS tape, and that is what sold so many tapes in the mid-90s. And this was, incidentally, the film was translated into a dozen languages and was shown by TLC affiliates all over the world.
Okay, I was going to ask that too. Thank you for telling us that.
Yes, and it was translated as video material as well, so it was sold as videotapes all over the world in multiple languages. Now, if the filmmakers or the film and video professionals out there will know what will smile when I say, the industry that we knew in the 90s has changed so much that it's left many of us wondering, where did the market go?
Yes.
And because niche films, as they're called, you rarely even find them anymore in retail places. And the answer was, eventually I found out that what had happened was all these films are now available online, and you simply have to know what you're looking for. So it's what led us a year ago, it's been more than a year and a half ago now, to begin this lifeafterlife.tv website, because I knew that stores were no longer carrying it. There just were no stores that carried any niche specialty films any longer. Really, all you ever find anymore are Hollywood theatricals for sale. Mm. But that if you wanted to really find a video, you would have to find it online. And in many cases, we, the film producers, would have to find the audiences. Now, your question about the original release, that was a video VHS. And what we did 2 years ago was we took the original master, which was a digital master, and we digitally remastered it and added a number of new effects, things that weren't even available 15 years ago when we first produced the film. And we also added a pretty significant amount of bonus material at the end of the DVD, which is available from the menu. Many more stories and in fact, I had done another television series for Hallmark in 2000 and 2001 called Miracles, Angels, and Afterlife. And in that TV series, we did a number of special segments and new interviews, and I've included all of that material as bonus material in the new DVD release of Life After Life. And that's the DVD that you find available on the website, lifeafterlife.tv.
And that's also the DVD that I've got available, correct?
Exactly. Yes.
In fact, excellent.
I hope that you sell hundreds of those through Toward the Light. I'm going to ask as a special favor to your listeners that you first try to find my DVD on Juliet's website and buy them first, because she has been a tremendous supporter to me. And I would love to see her move hundreds of them.
And I've got some wonderful copies, in fact, still some autographed copies, too, that you had sent when you were just in the process of digitizing this all into DVD format. And interestingly, I've still got one VHS video.
Do you? That's
for
a
sale.
Collector's item now.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
as
indeed.
As are the autographed copies. You had the first release of the DVD.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Well, I feel really humbled. Wow. This is really remarkable. And it's interesting to think about the digital age, you know, just going out and trying to get an audio cassette, for goodness sakes. They're just becoming more and more obsolete.
Yeah.
Which I think is a shame, really, because there's so much beautiful material that's still on the magnetic tapes that are sadly being done away with. But, well, the DVD is more durable, so it won't wear out very quickly, and people can enjoy life after life for a long time to come, and it's beautiful. And so how long is the film now? Is it a couple of hours on the DVD, or?
Well, altogether with the bonus material, it's about feature length, but it's about 90 minutes. I think there's 90 minutes of material.
Okay.
The film itself is 60 minutes, and which is, of course, longer than it was broadcast on the Learning Channel. Television always has to cut out the heart of a film to bring it down to 48 broadcast minutes. But the remastered copy is the full 60 minutes, and then there are about 30 minutes of bonus material.
And
incidentally, you talk about the quality of the DVD. It excited me so much to realize that when I did digitally remaster it for the DVD, I had never seen it look so good. Even in the original production, when we were doing it in the digital studio in the early 90s, and we were digital at that point, but even in the studio, it never looked so good as it does now on DVD.
Well, that's quite something. So there may have been some tweaking, as it were, of some of the equipment to digitize all this material. Because I was even seeing it on your website. And again, let's share with the listeners your website. It is lifeafterlife.tv. It's really beautiful. And I also wanted to ask you, Peter, about your books, because I don't want to leave this out. Reflections of Heaven, and also your book Journey of Light. Now, is this also some of the material that you were mentioning that you have got clips of, or the films, the additional films that you created, Afterlife, because I admit I haven't seen those, and I'm brand new to the even having a DVD player in my Mac here. So I'm new to DVDs, and I don't have a television, so DVD is the only thing that I can actually see at this point on my computer. But tell us about your books.
Yes, that was in late 90s, around 98, 99. We had been told by a number of people that they would love to see all of these film stories, the near-death experiences and the angels stories and the miracle stories, that they would like to see them in narrative form, written form, that they could show to, well, that they could give as gifts and share with other people in a more traditional, you know, book form. And so I was introduced to an agent who, in fairly short order, was able to obtain a book deal with Doubleday to do the first book, which is called Reflections of Heaven. And I found myself in a little bit of a quandary, because as a filmmaker, not as much writing as I'd ever done was to write the outlines for documentary scripts. And when it came time to translate the video transcript into a narrative form, that is to turn it into a written story, I found myself a little lost. And so I turned to my wife, who was an accomplished songwriter in country music, very colorful, you know, as you can imagine, the storytelling nature of country songs. She was always
And Stowe and I shared stories quite a bit whilst we were traveling back and forth from Nashville to Asheville.
Right.
It's just tremendous, and so I know exactly what you're talking about. I learned so much just talking to her about her experiences as a songwriter, because of course I am too, even though I'm not a country music songwriter.
Well, it's a skill unto itself, and the ability to write pictures in through words,
yes,
to be able to convey pictures through words. It turned out that Stowe was perfectly suited to help me translate into this new medium. So we co-wrote Reflections of Heaven. She wanted to be a ghostwriter on that book. She did not want front cover billing.
She's
still just a little bit maybe reticent. Maybe she didn't know whether the book was going to be any good and she didn't want her name attached. I don't know. But when it came out, it was really very well received. And Oprah even held it up for a day when she covered one of the miracle stories in the book. She held up the book, and I watched the Amazon rank go through the roof for a time.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, it was fun. And what happened was eventually I think it was about the day after Oprah held up the book, we got a second book deal with Doubleday to include more stories, this time stories that would include healing, spiritual, physical, and emotional healing. And in that book, Stowe really took a central part. And whereas the first book, Reflections of Heaven, was very much centered around my own life story and my own experiences as a filmmaker, and talking about my own spiritual experience, the second book, Journey of Light, focused on Stowe's personal story of she was literally redeemed from a hellish life as a young girl, and so Journey of Light is really her story, and she decided finally she was going to have her name on the cover. So the second book is Journey of Light, written by Peter Schocke and Stowe Schocke.
Wow, that's excellent. And they're such lovely books, too. I'm so pleased to have them in my library. And, you know, there's something to be said about the human experience, and that's why I've always been drawn to biographies as well, because there's such magic and wonder in someone's life story and reading about the pitfalls and then the triumphs, you know, even over seemingly irreversible adversity and that sort of thing. It's just absolutely fantastic. And so these books are $15, and they're also available on your site.
That's correct. And we actually, I'm glad that you asked, you mentioned this, because we have right now a limited time offer. We've come into a large number of Journey of Light copies, which we are going to offer, we are offering as a bonus when people order Life After Life. So for $19.95, for $20, a person can order Life After Life DVD and receive a free copy of Reflections of Heaven hardcover. And that's this is a good Christmas idea for people. That for $20, they can have two very, very high quality spiritual gifts to give to people. Maybe even watch first, read first, and then pass along.
That's great. And you're offering the film actually where people can view it for free, and you're also you're offering a download of it as well, correct?
The download isn't ready yet. The technology is not quite there. We're offering it as a Well, there is a download audio, and that person can put it onto their MP3. But the film itself, they can watch for free streaming, and of course that's with all that comes with current day streaming technology. In other words, it's a smaller picture, and it's not yet DVD quality, but they can watch each chapter, each of the 14 chapters of the film, they can watch each one after the other. There'll be a sign-up request after the third chapter, but they can watch the whole film. Somebody just told me today they had watched the whole film online and they loved it. I think that when people see it, they'll remember it and one day perhaps want to own a DVD. You know, this is a different day and age with the online, and it seems that really it fosters such a spirit of generosity. People seem to want to be able to give away a lot before they sell anything, and that really is the sense that I have with this. I would love for people to be able to watch this and pass the film around, watch it free online. If anybody wanted it for their library, they'll know where to find it when they're ready to do that. Or if they'd like to read the books that are behind the film, they know where to find them too. But meanwhile, many of these things can be, well, the whole film can be seen free online.
Oh, that's excellent. And then you've also got music, the soundtrack, the score by Ron Christie. I'd love to hear that too. That is really tremendous.
He's so good. Ron is just a first-rate movie score musician, and he scored Life After Life back in the day where he was affordable. And he and I made a contractual deal to where he kept the music score to be able to release as a CD, and we have a special deal with him now to where customers can buy the download MP3 at a very good price, and a lot of massage therapists and Reiki practitioners,
oh yes,
healing touch practitioners are using this as their background music to do their treatments.
Well, I admit I'm one of those. I love this ambient music, and I love having it as the backdrop of my life whilst I'm doing a lot of work here. I like having this kind of music going in the background, and I'm also a Reiki practitioner, and so I would definitely encourage people that are on the right track by doing this.
Yep, and speaking of tracks, they can listen to two of them for free. It's on the free gifts page of the website on lifeafterlife.tv. They can listen to two of the tracks for free and before deciding to buy the album.
Oh, that's great. Well, I should let people know, too, that in order to get the book along with the film, then they indeed do need to go to lifeafterlife.tv, and that's excellent. I personally can only offer the DVD itself and a few copies that are autographed. So it's a win-win no matter which route people choose, and I certainly have made it a point to make it easier for people to find Life After Life. It's such a beautiful site, Peter. You and your mates have done excellent work with this. And I think, you know, it's interesting that here it's all these years after the fact, and yet I feel that, if anything, it's very timely right now because of the fact that the topic of the near-death experience is such an open one now. And there's a lot more available material and people to talk about it. And so in all of this time, as I've thought about it intuitively, I really feel like there's going to be a tremendous revival and rebirth of the interest of, you know, not only the near-death experience, of course, but of your film, because it's a beautiful, beautiful film. And very informative as well. And we should add a little bit, too, that you, I guess also what prompted this And I'm trying to remember exactly what the chronological order was, because your father was getting ready to transition, so that's got to play in all of this as well. Was that what triggered the making of the film, or did that happen sort of in conjunction with?
Yes, in chronology, it actually was something that happened with. It was after the fact. After I met Raymond and we decided that we would make a film, it was shortly after that that my father passed away.
Wow.
And in fact, I had several months to be able to write a letter to my dad and tell him about the amazing conversations that I had by then had with Raymond Moody. And I told him in my letter all about the near-death experience. See, Dad had fallen ill. He had fibrosis of the lung. He was on oxygen, and the doctors were letting us know clearly that this was not going to last very much longer. And Dad was, even though he had had a very powerful, spiritually transformative experience of his own in his very later years, several years after my own experience, he still was just a little bit concerned about what would happen. Would he just evaporate? Would his consciousness go away? And when I told him in my letter about the various things that I had heard from Raymond, he said it just gave him such comfort and so much peace. And on the day that he died, my mother told me that the very last thing he said, his very last words were, the light. So he was seeing the light as he left, as he was transitioning away. And in fact, what happened then, when I finally got the budget to do the film and had the ability to create the film, it became a very natural step for me to just tell my own story, what had happened when my dad was dying. So the film is framed literally around the letter to my dad.
And it's so beautifully done.
Thank you. I'm still really touched when I even think about it, and because it meant so much to me and to my dad, and I think maybe that was the answer to that prayer that Raymond and I made, which is, let's make something that is creative and that touches the heart rather than just talks to the mind.
Well, absolutely, and I just feel it's really auspicious somehow that your father got to play a very significant role in this, and the fact that this whole thing, and to me that's really what it's about, is to bring comfort to these individuals, not only those who are getting ready to transition, but also those who just wonder about it. You know, what does happen when we die? That's the big question that has plagued us throughout eternity, basically. And now, as more and more of those experiences are coming forward, we're able to iterate to the world that we do not lose consciousness, we do not lose our selfhood when our physical bodies die. In fact, that's the only thing that is lost is the shell, the body. Not us, not who we are, not our connection with everybody else. And I think, again, that's why I had that wonderful experience several days ago, that peace that came over me, just reminding me about what I experienced and learned during my near-death episode. Because every day they're becoming ever more relevant. And so I would say with your film, you know, get ready to spread this all over the world, because there are still a lot of people, amazingly, who've got no idea that this material even exists, that there are other experiences out there. We will come back to talk about it. A lot of people still question their sanity. They still feel very isolated and alone. So our work clearly is not complete yet. We've got a lot more to do. And that's another reason why I'm so excited to help promote your film Life Afterlife, because of how very informative it is and how it does indeed touch the heart. There's nothing sensationalistic about it. It's just absolutely exquisite. And again, even as I'm just looking at the trailer, I get all teary-eyed. I just think, oh, goodness me, this is so beautiful. I'm really grateful that you've got the website. And as you're making more developments, is there any other news, anything else about that that you'd like to share or plan for upcoming films?
Thank you for that. I'd like to maybe suggest that as we're reinventing now how films are found and discovered and distributed, this is really a new day for retailing anything. And I think maybe in light of the way that music has reinvented through the MP3 and through iTunes and so on, we have just been led, and you and I being quite the pioneers in this, to figuring out a way to develop an affiliate program. I might say that any of your listeners who have websites of their own that are regarding near-death experiences or spiritual transformation or anything of its kind can enter into it an affiliate program, very much like the Amazon affiliate, but I think a whole lot more generous. And the way they would do that is to go in through your portal, through your website, and you can mention again the places where they'll find your the Life After Life banners on your websites. And if they enter through that portal, then they will be able to go on to our website, Life After Life, look into the store, and follow the links to the affiliate program. And it's a free affiliate system. It's very simple to use now, I think. We'd like to think.
We've certainly been working on it, yes.
I think we've cracked the code, and it's now available for anyone else with a website to put up a similar banner or a newsletter, which we've now finished a 15-part newsletter series, which include film clips and so on. Pretty exciting, and that they can all become affiliates if they would like to.
Well, that's excellent.
But certainly to please go in through Juliet and the Toward the Light portal, so that they can track your affiliates, your affiliate code. Could you repeat again the banner links and where they would find them specifically on your websites?
Oh, sure, and they can even find them on the show info page on the BBS radio site. So when you see the link Toward the Light, and then there's a link that says info, click on that and scroll down the info page there, and there's also a banner to Life After Life. Then, of course, it's located on towardthelight.org. It's on the books page, it's on the resources page, it's on your page, and that's towardthelight.org/PeterStowSchocke.html, StowSchocke. So it's Peter Stowe Schocke, because I've got both of you on the page there. And then it's also on the blog, on the Toward the Light radio show blog, and that's towardthelight.org.blogspot.com. And then also lightonthewater.ning.com. And you're on that site, too. You're a part of the Light on the Water community, and it's wonderful to have you there. And so,
early adopter, wasn't I?
Yes, and you're certainly welcome to do shameless self-promotion, as we say in Nashville, anytime you want there. And actually, I've put your banner all over the place, and I'm sure I'm leaving out some of them. I don't want to bore everybody with all the links, but towardthelight.org, and from there, there are links to the blogs and other sites that all contain banner as well.
So people should have no trouble being able to find a link to Life After Life, and once they've done that, then they can go to the store link and follow their nose, follow the breadcrumbs to affiliate links, and from there it's all self-explanatory.
Or as I would say, follow the light, because he's got a beautiful luminous website. It's wonderful. And I want to send lots of love to Estelle. I'm sorry that she couldn't pipe in a few words today. She's on, a healing camp somewhere. But I'm so pleased that that her condition is improving, and it's interesting that she's got the same condition that I had, and I, of course, recovered, and she's recovering without having a near-death experience, and I'm so pleased about that. Bless her. She's a wonderful, wonderful soul, and it's been so wonderful having you on Toward the Light. Any other news that you would like to share, Peter, before we close out for this transmission of Toward the Light?
Well, I would like to ask people to lift up Stowe in their prayers and their meditations and visualizations, because she has 6 months ago we received a cancer diagnosis, and it was alarming, and we I won't go into great detail, but we decided after a rather unfruitful bout with chemo and radiation, we decided to do some alternative therapies, which have been working brilliantly, and thank God, I think this is going to be behind us very soon. But it's been quite an amazing journey. Still, I'd love for people to lift up Stowe and just ask continued healing, and ask for God's light to permeate her.
Well, I'm here to say that really will work, too, according to my experience, because I was irreversibly damaged as a result of having the chemo and radiation inflicted on me as well. And in fact, I asked them to stop it. I said, this is worse than the disease itself. Just let me die. And it's interesting that I ended up doing fasting and juicing and taking very dark green foods and spirulina and all of that stuff, and I'm still alive. I couldn't have imagined that I would have reached the age that I am now.
How many years ago was that?
Well, and this is when I flatlined, actually, on my birthday. That NDE was in the mid-70s, and it was the same time probably that Raymond Moody was writing or releasing his book, Life After Life. I went into the coma on Boxing Day of 75, which is, I guess Americans don't know when that is. It's 26 December, the day after Christmas, I lapsed into a coma. Then I flatlined on my birthday, which is 2nd February of 76, and then finally came out of the coma. So what, are we talking about 6 weeks here? 6 or 7 February. And so, as I said, during that time, I had no idea about even the word near-death experience. I had no shoulder to cry on, as it were, and certainly not in that regard. And then I just started doing the regimen with the fasting and the juicing and doing herbs and prayer. And with my health crises that I've been dealing with this year too, it's just been quite serious. The same results. I'm doing that a lot now, and you and I have been sharing, comparing notes on all of this, doing the Budwick diet and juice and raw foods, staying away from chemicals, and especially staying away from the allopathic stuff with their drugs, because that stuff is really damaging, and I am admittedly rather emotionally charged about it. When people talk about, oh, I'm going to get chemo and radiation, because they default into the fear, oh, we have to do this. No, they don't have to do that, and that's why I think it's really wonderful that we're setting these examples, that that people do not have to succumb to the fear and to the death sentence, actually, that's being handed out by doctors. Because, again, Stowe has got exactly what I had. Same thing.
Exactly the same. And the life expectancy has been, since the days when you had this illness, about 5 years. And here you are 30 years later.
Yes, and so in fact,
great testimony for Stowe to be embracing right now.
Oh, yes, and that's why I like keeping in touch with her and inspiring her and say, Lassie, you know, here I am, co-blind in my 60s, and this was in my early 30s when I had this death experience. And what's interesting is that, you know, this kind of thing is often referred to as a spontaneous recovery or spontaneous remission or what have you. And I really do think it is as a result of prayer. That's huge. I can't underestimate, or I should say, I never want to overestimate the power of prayer and of love to help reverse all of this stuff. And in fact, when I had Rick Madison on my show recently, he's the Christian evangelist who was pronounced dead on arrival at Vanderbilt University Medical Center from a head-on collision. And it was just through prayer, literally, that he was brought back to life. I think it was his mom and his dad and somebody else, another relative who were in the prayer chapel at Vanderbilt praying for him. And he's alive today, you know. So,
well, it's increasing the light and the life that is in us, that's put in us from the beginning, that's breathed into us from the very beginning. And when someone is ill, it seems very simple when I say this. It seems very self-evident, but we're not prescribed to this typically. That what you want to do when you're sick is you want to increase the life that's in you and not diminish it. And so when you're eating raw living fruits and vegetables and barley drinks and green, deep green drinks, what you're doing is you're giving yourself a supercharged boost of life, because these things are still living. They've never been killed by cooking or by processing. And so you're ingesting life, which increases your own life force, and it gives your body the ability to fight the illness, whatever it is. But the typical wisdom that we get from our allopathic treatments is kill everything first. It's sort of like nuclear and chemical warfare, which takes a horrible toll of collateral damage on our immune system and on the life in our body. So we become truly victim to trying to hold on to life itself when we're undergoing chemo and radiation, and it seems to be just taking us in the wrong direction. So what Stowe has been truly being healed by now is by increasing the life and the light in her body through prayer, through eating, as some people say, eating as close to the sun as you can. That is, eating food that is grown through sunlight, by sunlight, that's taken its energy in as light, and that you are going to ingest with no middlemen, with no steps. In other words, she's not eating any animal proteins. No.
Excellent. Meat, excellent.
Nothing that's gone second and third generation of light energy from the sun. She's eating it all first generation in the form of raw fruit, raw vegetables, raw green leafy, and raw seeds that came from the fruit and the vegetables.
And that's a really important point that I've also made, too, is that chemo is just poison. It kills everything in its track. It's not medicinal. It doesn't heal anything. It just destroys. And
Can't heal.
Exactly. And I'm so, so grateful that you're making this point, that to put life into the body, not something that's going to destroy life. And, I'm excited about this because, as I said, I've been really passionate about this ever since it's happened to me. And funnily enough, even as I was revived in hospital, and of course all that time I was in intensive care, they were still giving me a death sentence. Oh, you've got X amount of time to live, and we need you to come back in so we can do a surgical procedure. And I thought, what the heck are you talking about? And I turned, I was carried out of there. I couldn't walk. But mind you, I metaphorically walked away and never turned back, ever.
Should have their wrists slapped when they tell a patient that they have so long to live.
That yes, indeed.
It takes away all hope and all personal involvement in their own healing. That now they'll just follow doctor's orders and die on schedule.
Well, it's all about inflicting fear on people and feel like chemo kills. You know, it's a low vibrational frequency, and it doesn't help or serve anything. That's why, again, the experience that I had several days ago, just reminding me of the love that surrounds us at all times. That's what we need to keep focusing on, not the fear, not the destruction, not the oh-but-what-if syndrome. We really, really need to remember that love is the driving force here and that all of this darkness is just coming out so it can actually literally burn itself out into oblivion, because its days are numbered. And I also maintain that none of us NDEs would have been sent back to share our stories if that were not the case. So this is really exciting with Stowe recovering, and I've certainly been with both of you on this journey. You're so dear to me and always have been, and I'm very, very pleased that she is feeling better. So let's put out a lot of prayer for Stowe Shockey, who is indeed recovering from colon cancer. And there's another wonderful website that I like to talk about too that my friend Claude Swanson has created, globalpeaceprayer.com. And of course, Claude is a physicist who with the site is really pointing out the power of prayer and how and why it is so powerful. So he gives some really good information on that site. Again, it's globalpeaceprayer.com. And then for this wonderful NDE that will inspire everyone for generations to come is lifeafterlife.tv to now get the DVD and even download versions of the film Life After Life. Peter, it's just been so wonderful having you on the show.
Goodness Thank you.
Me.
It's been a pleasure as always. I look forward to the next time we can meet again by phone.
Well, it'll be wonderful, and indeed, let us know. I think we've got a good project for you to work on now, and maybe I can help you research some people and other parts of the world who can help facilitate doing a Life After Life Volume 2 based on NDEs from the East and from other parts of the world that are not so Western Christian influence. It'd be nice to get all of these different cultural visions and input. I think it would be a great... Who knows, you could have several volumes of this. I don't think you're going to have trouble filling up, getting people interested in participating in the doing of these films, because people are so hungry and thirsty for this knowledge now that is actually inspiring them, giving them a sense of hope and helping to dispel all fears. So I really want to thank you for this tremendous work that you've done, and hopefully soon we'll get Raymond on the show. We're working on that, but I understand he's being a bit shy too, although he has been on radio before, and we've got a lot of friends in common, you being one of them, Peter, so hopefully soon we'll get Raymond on the show, and he might boast about your wonderful film too,
so
that'll be great.
We'll keep that envisioned, and I'm sure it'll happen.
Oh, that's wonderful. And we've been speaking with Peter Shockey, who is the writer, director, and producer of the film Life After Life, based on Raymond Moody's book by the same title. And it is a beautiful, beautiful film, now available on DVD. So please visit the website lifeafterlife.tv And if you don't remember that URL, you can always find Life After Life through towardthelight.org, and do indeed visit my website, where Peter and Still have got their own page on towardthelight.org, and the show will be archived and put on that page also. That's towardthelight.org/PeterStowShockey.html. And next week we are going to have Mr. Mark Pitstick on Toward the Light, and he's also written a book about the near-death experience and soul union. So we want to tune in next week to listen to another transmission of Toward the Light. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can indeed see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week. Thank you for joining us. Lots of love and light.